My name's Michelle Owu. I'm carrying out this interview on behalf of the Wellcome Trust for the One Another Project. The date today is the 25th of August 2009. The time is now 10:12 a.m. Could you tell me your name, your age and where you come from, please?
My name is Catherine Landall. I am 45 years old and currently I come from Andover in Hampshire. Originally, I was born in New Zealand to two English parents, so I see myself as a child of both countries.
What were your parents doing in New Zealand?
Well, my mother came over primarily because she wanted to have an adventure with her son, and my father was passing through on his world trip to go to around the world. He started off in England and he was going around the world. They met at the New Zealand Dairy Board, fell in love, and stayed, and I was the result of their staying.
Have you got any brothers or sisters?
I have one brother. I mean, you could technically say he's my half-brother, but I never think about him like that. His name's Kenton, and he's living in New Zealand with his family. And he was born in England.
When did you move back to the UK?
We came over in June of 1998. Originally, our intention was to make use of the Year 2000 project, but my son Paul developed a very wicked form of epilepsy called Landau-Kleffner syndrome. There are only two places in the world that can take care of him, and one of them was Great Ormond Street. He consequently died 18 months later. My husband needed a heart operation. I was pregnant. My son really needed decent schooling and to stay in one place without too much upset. So we decided to stay until he came out of high school, which he's just done. But now he's in a feeder school to Cambridge. So we are staying for a while.
Was it a bit of a culture shock when you came back?
It was hard and it wasn't. I had a kind of a double-minded experience in that because my mother and father are English, language and culturally, there was a lot that resonated with me and I totally understood naturally. And my husband said that my accent changed within 2 days. I went from a New Zealander to an English person in 2 days. But there were things I didn't understand, like do your head in and the northern things. And just those little things like, how you doing? All right, all right. You know, those are the things that you only understand by living in England.
Is there anything you really miss about New Zealand?
That's an interesting question. I miss my family. If I could take my family and bring them here and they would be happy, then I would. As for the place itself, I need the wide open spaces in the mountains, but I generally have been back once every 2 or 3 years and that's enough. But my family, like my mother-in-law and my mother and my father-in-law and my father and all of those brothers and sisters, them, I would have here. I'm very happy in the UK.
How did you meet your husband?
That's a good question. We've originally met at university and I decided that he was a total jerk and he decided I was a babe. We re-met the day before he was to get married and I'd seen a friend of his and thought, oh, maybe you're not a jerk, and talked to him and thought, no, you're a jerk. Good luck with your marriage, mate. Good luck. And then I was in Wellington studying to be a journalist, Wellington, New Zealand, and I would walk down the quay and he'd say, hello, Catherine, and I would look up and I wouldn't see him. I literally could not see him. Then we met at a party and I took one look at him and thought, cool, you're a bit of all right. And at that, we then re-met at another party and it was a cocktail party. He was the only person who hadn't drunk anything. I was an arts journalist at that stage, so I needed to get to the show we had free tickets for, and he was the only one who could drive me. So I was in a cocktail waitress's outfit, okay, with crinoline and nothing else. I had a pair of gloves and a helmet. He was mad. He did not want to leave that party. He did not want to take me to the theatre. Also, we hopped on his bike. In Wellington, when you go around the edges, they're like Canada. They're very crinkly. And he decided to scare the living daylights out of me by trying to scrape his pegs along the road and make sparks. Now, first corner he took, I thought, I'm going to die. Well, okay, if I'm going to die, let's go out and enjoy it. Faster, darn you, go faster! And by the time we'd got to the theatre, he was like, whoa, I can't frighten this girl. This girl's an action-adventure babe. Let's take another look at her, because she's actually quite exciting. And our relationship went from there.
And are you working at the moment?
I work as a freelance journalist / author. I've had children's short stories and poetry published in New Zealand and in England. And at the moment I'm working on a screenplay, freelance, called Martial Arts Mama, which is about a woman who, through martial arts, comes to terms with herself and learns that she can get on in the world.
Can you describe what you're wearing for me, please?
Yes, I am wearing a turquoise, no, not turquoise, it's deeper, aquamarine, gabardine cloak with blue panels in the back, a Queen Victoria crown. Underneath, I'm wearing a white silk dress with a blue patterned curtain bodice with lace and stars. And under that, I am wearing a pair of black pair of trousers and a Taekwondo muscle shirt with the pattern of my Taekwondo dojang, which is Odaquan in Andover.
Why are you wearing this outfit?
The Virgin Mary represents my spiritual journey. It's because I'm a Christian, I thought I put God first, and I thought, well, you know, people turn off and they get bored, so why don't we just represent the Virgin Mary and introduce them to that way. Queen Victoria represents my history, but I also want to show people that we've moved on. We no longer sit here and colour the empire red. We're actually a progressive nation out there, and I want to get that across. The whites represent Zealandia. That is where I was born. It's kind of how my psyche was formed. And the black and the muscle shirt is just me. And I thought I'd like to represent the four statues of things that are my identity, my spirituality, my history, where I was born, and who I am.
How are you going to spend your time on the
I've got cut it into four quarters. The first quarter is the Virgin Mary. She is going to pray, and I'm going to encourage people around the plinth to pray, and I have prayer balloons and a team that are going to go out, and if people want prayers, we're going to write them on the card, put them in the balloons, and let them go. With Queen Victoria, I'm going to do a visual joke of colouring the world red. I'm going to read very British poetry, and I'm going to do Dosan, which is a Taekwondo pattern, but it's very close quarter. When it comes to Zealandia, I'm going to interact with the crowd more. We're going to play games like guess the New Zealand sport, how long can you suck a minty for? I will read New Zealand poetry, and then when it gets down to me, I'm going to do a couple of visual jokes, and one is I love UK, I love the UK summer, and I'm going to get a yellow raincoat out and gumboots and put them on and stand there and wave, and then the sign's going to peel back the sign and say I love UK winter. I'm going to take the raincoat off, put a jumper on, put the raincoat back on, and tie a red scarf around my neck.
Where does your love of poetry stem from?
Hone Tuwharai, who I'm going to be reading for you today, was a poet that galvanised me. I think there was kind of two things that happened. I love language. I love listening to accents. I love, especially in England, it's just awesome. You can go 2 minutes and somebody speaks differently. And that to me is fantastic. I thrive on that. And when I got down to study English at Otago University, I met Hone Tuwharai, and he read this poem, which I'm going to read today in honour of him, called No Ordinary Son. And I suddenly... it was like someone had switched a bomb off on my head, and I went from being a lover of poetry to a writer of poetry. And I kind of never stopped since then. If somebody's doing poetry, I'm there. If it's not very good, 2 minutes, but if it's Pam Ayres, the rest of the day, you know?
What was it about his work that you liked?
Hone, and this is a New Zealand thing, is a cheeky bugger. No, I will say that. He is a cheeky bugger. The poem, he read the poem as a result of the Peace March, but he was actually on Bikini Island.
Peace March,
sorry. We had in New Zealand in the 1980s, we were fighting very hard to keep New Zealand nuclear free. Okay, and I was part of Peace Movement Aotearoa, and we had a Peace March in the August. Yeah, because I'd stayed down there for that. And he read No Ordinary Son, and what gripped me about No Ordinary Son was he was blunt, he was to the point, he drew his most beautiful pictures with words, but he also put a warning in there. And I realised that you can be cheeky, but you can also get a point across. And I think poetry for me is a form of, poets are the jokers of society. We get to say things that no one else can. We and the comedians are the barometers of society, basically, because we can say what you would like to say, but you just can't.
What types of subjects does your poetry cover?
Well, the normal things that most poets do, love, loss. And when I came to England, a lot of my poetry was about English morals and mores. For instance, the first poem I'm going to read is, the very British poem is going to be "Oh, to be in England, now football fever's here, all the streets are empty, the trolley aisles are clear." And that's just the experiences of living in England. But the other poems that I like write about is I write about personal things to people. I like to try now to reflect what people are going through and ease their life by saying, it's okay, I'm going through it too, we'll get through.
Is there a parallel there with your belief, your religion?
In a way, but I think God came and I was minding my own business. When I was young, I had a very difficult upbringing, and I can't talk about that, and I'm sorry. But I used to go to church because it was peaceful, And then I walked away from Christ for a long time. When I came back to God, it was because I wanted to bring that peace into my family and I wanted good, strong role models for my son. And I think that there is a parallel in that God says, think. Don't ever stop thinking, you know. I am love, I am care. But, you know, challenge things, think about things, and don't sit still, whatever you do. Now, a lot of people don't see God like that, but I do. God's like a father to me. He's like the father. He kind of raised me. I like to think of it in that sort of term. And it's only since I've come to England I have any Christian poetry published, oddly enough, in poetry anthologies. Because I never had any Christian poetry published while I was in New Zealand. Mainly my poems in New Zealand are science fiction, like The Purple Fantastic Feels Like Elastic, Spangled in Plastic Ray Gum, which has just come out in the New Zealand Voyages, the New Zealand Science Fiction Anthology of Science Fiction Poetry.
Are you keen on science fiction?
Love it! I have a Facebook site, and if I was a genre, I would be the gung-ho takeover the universe genre. So my reply to that is, yep, I am building a spaceship in my backyard, but I'm not going to get the guy, get the girl. I'm going to get the girls together, and we'll take over the universe. So there.
How did you hear about this project?
I'm a Twitterer, and while I was Twittering, my good friend Piers B. Said to have a look at this link, and I looked at it and I thought, oh, that would be so cool. Oh, I'd love to do that. What could I do? And then I thought, well, I'm going to holiday in New Zealand. I'll probably not get a space. And I thought, nah, let's try it and see what happens. The Wednesday before the Sunday that I had to leave, the acceptance came up, and I went, oh, is it? And I went, oh my gosh, the date's right. I could do this. It's 2 weeks after I come back. Oh, it's a tight squeeze. Do you think I could pull it off? Yeah, I reckon. I've got good friends and a good support team. I think I could do this. What am I going to do? Oh no, what am I going to do?
And how long did it take you before this idea came into being?
I actually put down, when I was sitting there, I was thinking, well, what is my identity? And I thought, well, I'm spiritual, I'm kind of a daughter of two nations, I am energetic, I am fun, so that's what I've got to do my show about. And I thought, well, it'd be really funny to parody women's statues, because boy, they can be so tedious sometimes. And then I thought, so I put that down, and I thought, now I've said it, I'm going to have to do it. So I went all over New Zealand snapping statues and thinking deeply about things, because the statue of Queen Victoria in New Zealand is a very strong statue in the middle of Wellington Central City, and here as well, I might add. And I thought, yeah, she has featured in my life so long. And then I thought, well, Virgin Mary, that's a good way of getting the Christian thing across without, you know, because people can walk, you know, people can, the thing about Christianity is it's a choice. And you must let people have that choice, even when you're evangelizing. So I thought, well, that's how we'll do it. We'll do it as a statue, and so people have a choice. You know?
What choice, sorry?
Well, the thing is, you believe or you don't, and you can come to belief, or you can move away from belief. But God doesn't come down with a big thumb and say, you're mine, and you must believe in me. God says, I love you. I love you. I made you, and I think you're awesome. I really do. And I know you're struggling with this, and I'd like to do this with you if you listen to me. That's your choice. You can choose whether you want to do that or not. And I believe that everybody must have that right. Right now, everybody's really angry about Lockerbie, but people had choices. They made choices about that terrorist. Whether they made the right choice or not, we don't know. But they exercised choice. And I think choice, expression, and freedom is very important. Even if you're in jail, in solitary, to choose to be in jail or to choose and be crushed by the system or to choose to mentally take yourself to somewhere else is a choice. And I think that's the key. I think everybody needs that.
What was it about this project that made you want to take part, do you think?
Two things. One is, without us it wouldn't happen, so we have to pitch in. And also two, the whole, three things. Never expect Spanish Inquisition. Three things. One was, if you don't volunteer, you don't get the Minties. Do you know what I'm saying? Secondly, I thought it would be fun. I thought it would be so much fun. Everybody, you know, everybody doing everything. And then thirdly, I thought, well, I'd like to, it's time I moved into the performance poetry sphere. I need to step up, and I need to do a big step up, and this is it. This will be the push that I need to kind of get myself going. And it has been. It's been amazing. And there was one other thing too. I thought, this is an amazing experience I could bring my friends to. And we could say, for a day, we were part of the support team for the plinth, or we were on the plinth, but just for 1 hour, we had our moment in the sun. And I thought, yeah, that's good. Let's share the love.
Will this be your first performance poetry?
This, absolutely, yeah. I have performed poetry before, but I've always kind of done it as a favour to a friend or slotted myself in there or, you know, I'm part of a big team. This is the first time I've ever done a solo thing by myself, especially for an hour. I mean, that's, no one goes to a poetry reading for an hour. Well, they do, but it's lots of different poets. And the humour, I'm sorry, I have a degree of flippancy. You know, my spiritual gifting is flippancy and humour, and that's actually a very important part of this as well. It's just, isn't it? Don't you think? I think so. I've watched them. I've watched all the plinthers and gone, oh, it's raining. Oh, no.
Have you enjoyed watching?
Yes, I have. I like that guy with the sparkly light skirt. He was really amazing. But everybody's done something. And some is, you know, I looked at, my attitude about it changed because I knew what I was going to do. And I thought, well, that's a bit boring. And then I'd listen. I'd have it on while I was doing other things. And I'd listen to them talking. And I thought, no, they're beautiful. Each one of them is absolutely beautiful in their own way. And actually, I like this bit. Click. You know, each one of them are quite magical and miraculous in their own way. And it's just a matter of being patient enough to look at them and discover that miraculousness.
Do you have any reservations about doing it?
My heart is like this because I'm not good with heights. And also, too, I want everything to work because I know how it's going to go in my own mind, and it's not going to go exactly like that. It's going to go exactly how it goes. And you need to be flexible about that because it's an open-air performance. My only true reservation, I guess, would be that it's going to be over so quickly, and also, too, that my private life is not private anymore. The whole, as soon as I signed on for the plinth, my private life disappeared out the window, literally. Because, well, I had to, in order to get here, we had to raise sponsorship, I had to be in the papers, I had to do radio interviews, I had to talk to my friends. And so, if I had a private life, the door got opened. Now, there are still some parts of my private life that are extremely private, but not anymore. Not anymore. I've just had to give that away in order to be here because I've got a disability. I have a repetitive strain injury, which means I can't do too much heavy lifting. I can do a little, but not a lot. Now, Taekwondo has really helped me in that. It's helped my spine. It's helped my muscles. But I need a team. I'm always going to need to be part of a team. Always, wherever I go and whatever I do.
Could you expand on that?
Because I need people to help me carry things. I need people to help me put things together. Like, you know, we've got boards. We've been painting boards. We've been doing printouts. We've been getting the minties together. We've got sponsorship. And whatever I do, I'm always going to have to be part of a group. There's no such thing as woman alone anymore, as much as I'd like to pretend there is.
What kind of sponsorship were you trying to raise?
Just for the travel money. I thought if I'm going to bring a bunch of people in, I'd like to have the travel money. And I agreed with a friend of mine that if we had any money left over, I'd give it back to. He's basically, he likes to take children away on camps to Wales from the church. And they target children that sometimes struggle with going away on camps or may not get to camp. And so I promised him that all the leftover money would go to him.
What's been your husband's reaction to you wanting to take?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's it. Oh, you're going up there. Oh, what are you doing? Look, I'm trying to work. Stop bugging me. Yeah, I always knew it was going to be a bit hard. I think you're being far too hard on your son. Oh, we've got this much to do. Okay, Catherine, you need to get onto this train. Oh, we're here. Can I help you?
Is there anything else you'd like to say?
Thank you. Thank you so very, very, very much, because it is going to be fun.
Thank you very, very much.